That is, Parshas Naso is the largest parsha in the Torah, at least when the parshiyos are not joined together. It's 176 psukim. A lot of it is because there's a lot of repetition. The Nesiim brought korbanos for the dedication of the Mishkan, and the Torah repeats the identical korban for each of the Nesiim 12 times. That's why for a Bal Korei it is not as difficult, because there's a lot of repetition. Although I tell you, I still remember when I was in 7th grade, I was just bar mitzvah, and I had to lane the last day of Hanukkah. So I figured, that's easy, all it is Nesiim. But then I realized last day of Hanukkah, it also goes into the beginning of Baloska that I didn't prepare, so I still remember that lump in my throat as I was, you know, confronting a bunch of psukim. But nevertheless, it is the largest parsha of the Torah. And the Chidushi HaRim says that because Parshas Naso is always the week after Shavuos, there is so much Torah in the air. There's the spiritual force of Torah in the air that it gets concretized in the number of verses in the Chumash itself. The Chumash itself is a reflection of the koach of Torah. By the way, Derech Agav, the significance of the repetition is really twofold. I mean, why does the Torah repeat it 12 times? And the Torah could have just said, everybody brought what the first person brought. So number one, the Medrash tells us that even though everybody brought the same korban, every tribe had a different and unique symbolism for what they brought. The meaning of the silver bowl of Yehuda was not the same as Reuven and Shimon and Yisachar and Zevulun. Each one had a separate kavana. And that's a very important lesson in Avodas Hashem, that even when people are doing the same mitzvahs, everybody brings their unique kavana to that mitzvah. You have to bring your individuality. Your Shabbos is not the same as somebody else's Shabbos. Your mincha is not the same as somebody else's mincha. The notion of a community does not presuppose sameness, but rather community depends on the individuality and uniqueness of each participant. There's another lesson, though, that is, of the 12 Nesiim, who is the great hero of the 12? Well, we would say Nachshon, because he was the first one and he jumped into the Red Sea. But vis-a-vis this particular gift, it was Yisachar. Because Nachshon brings a very fancy offering. Day two is Yisachar. Yisachar has to make a momentous decision. Should this be a competition in which I will up the ante? Or should I make this an expression of our unity and our togetherness as a klal? By Yisachar bringing the same korban, Yisachar set the pattern for the notion that Avodas Hashem is not about competition. It's not about one-upmanship, but it's about collaboration and working together. And that is why the Lashon of the Torah for Yisachar is Hikriv Nisano Ben Suar, which literally means he sacrificed himself. He sacrificed his kavod. He sacrificed his gedula. He would no longer get praised for originality. All he did was copy. And yet, he sacrificed his glory to establish the notion of unity and achdus. Lahavdil, it always reminds me, to use a secular analogy, of George Washington. You know, George Washington was so popular after the American Revolution that he was offered to be president for life. He was even offered the title of king, King of America. This was a title, emperor, whatever it would be. And certainly after he served two terms as president, there was nothing then in the Constitution that prevented a president from having more than two terms. In fact, Franklin Roosevelt had four terms. It's only after he died that they made an amendment. You can only have two terms. The Republicans did it to be sure that there would never be another FDR. I guess the Republicans knew they would never have more than two terms anyway as a president, so it was only a chashash of a Democrat. But anyway, George Washington declined to run for a third term because he said a president is not a king. In a democratic society, you have to turn over power, replace people. And he set the tone, meaning the tone of America would have been totally different. Same thing, Lahavdil, Nisano Ben Suar set the tone that in Avodas Hashem, you don't compete. We're all on the same team. They tell a beautiful story about the Panovitcher Rav. Panovitcher Rav was a tremendous fundraiser. In fact, the Satmar Rebbe used to say that when people were debating, is there intelligent life on Mars? He says he knows for sure there's no intelligent life on Mars, because otherwise the Ponovitcherev would have been collecting money from there. He says, if he hasn't been to Mars, there is no life there. That's what he said. But the Ponovitcherev once came to Chicago. He used to come to Chicago a lot. And he came at the same time that a Meshulach came from the much smaller Navardika yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Small yeshiva, still relatively small yeshiva. You know, the Navardika would come and collect every year. He would get whatever he would get. He certainly could not collect what the Ponovitcherev would collect. So when he sees the Ponovitcherev, he's initially very disappointed, because he figures, all right, this is a wasted trip. But he figures he'll sit down and listen to a wonderful shir, a wonderful drasha. And the Ponovitcherev gives a beautiful drasha with humor and with maisim and with insight and with chidushim. Just a wonderful, wonderful drasha. And he totally captures the audience. And after, everybody is in his pocket, so to speak. He then says, Rabosai, there's a person here from a wonderful yeshiva in Bnei Brak. And I would ask you that whatever money you would give me, you should give him. So the person got a lot more money than he ever made in Chicago. He never made that amount of money before. He goes over to the Rav afterwards and says, you know, I'm very, very grateful for this, but I really don't understand. You came from Eretz Yisrael all the way to Chicago, and flights took longer then, to collect for your yeshivos, and you just give it all away. He says, I don't understand how you could do, how the Rav could do that. And the Ponovitcherev says, I don't know what you mean, my yeshiva, your yeshiva. What does that even mean? We are all on the same side. Our goal is to be Marbitz Torah, to be Mekadesh Hashem's name. If this amount of money could support 20 students who are learning, the Ponovitcherev says, I don't care if those 20 people are in Ponovitch or those 20 people are in Navardik. He says, it makes no difference to me at all. He says, I'm perfectly happy to give you the money. Again, this is a perspective that's fairly rare. But you see the ideal of what it was. Actually, what's interesting, Rav Yudel of Mir was the same way. The Yeshiva of Mir was, in fact, Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel was the same way. If you read the stories, you'll see that sometimes the Mir administration was very frustrated with him. He would visit a yeshiva like Neri Yisrael in Baltimore to see how Lakewood. And he would start giving money to Bnei Torah, who impressed him. And this was money that was collected for Mir, and he was giving it to them, to Lakewood, Neri Yisrael. So as a result, the administration didn't let him have a lot of collected money. They kind of took custody of it very, very quickly, because when he had money, he would give it away to any Ben Torah who he thought was worthy and learning well. He didn't have a sense of proprietorship, that it's only Mir, or whatever it is. This was the derech of Gedolim. And this idea of collaboration is really the lesson of Nisano ben Suar, the Nasi of Yisachar. But going back to Parshas Nasa, I want to say something about Nasa, which will link to both Haftarahs, both the Haftarah of Nasa and the Haftarah of Baal Yischar. That is, we have a Mishkan, right? The Mishkan was dedicated Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the beginning of the second year. And 1 month afterwards begins the Book of Bamidbar, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, when Moshe is commanded to count the Jewish people. And then we set up the camps, right? We have three camps: the Machane of Shekhinah, which is the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, surrounded by the Machane of the Levim, and then that's surrounded by the Israelites on four sides, Machane Yisrael. Machane Leviah in turn has three sons of Levi: Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. So Rav Tzadok says, the concept of the Mishkan being in the middle is a reminder that all parts of the Jewish people have to regard their focal point and their center as Avodas Hashem. Right? That's clear. That's why the Mishkan is in the middle. But why do we have three Machanos of Leviah? So Rav Tzadok says, because the Torah is teaching us, as Pirkei Avos tells us, Al Shleisha Devarim HaOlam Omeit, the world stands on three pillars. And that is Torah, Limud HaTorah, Avoda, which is prayer and korbanos, and Gemilos Chasadim, kindness. And Rav Tzadok wants to say, Kahas is Keneged Torah, Gershon is Keneged Avoda, we'll explain why, and Merari is Keneged Gemilos Chasadim. And the three Mishpachos of Levi Levi, after all, is an Oved Hashem. Levi are connected Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim. The connection to Kehas and Torah is obvious. Kehas, of course, were the family grouping that carried the Aron HaKodesh, Mimakom L'makom. The Aron HaKodesh is the repository of Torah. Kehas represents the Koach of Torah. Gershon, now this is a little less obvious. Gershon represents the Koach of Tefillah. It's a little more difficult, but Rav Sadek explains that what did Gershon carry? Gershon carried the cloths and the tapestries that covered the Mishkan. Right, the Mishkan was boards, but the boards were covered with yurios, with various curtains and cloths. So yurios were the roof of the Mishkan. Right, the boards, there was no roof. The boards were covered with yurios. Now, a roof is what makes a bias. Right, something is not a bias until it has a roof. We find that the word bias is always connected to prayer, because one of the names for the Beis HaMikdash is Beis Tefillah. That a bias that gives you security and refuge is connected to the Kayach of Tefillah. And since Gershon made the Mishkan a bias, they represent the Koach of Tefillah that gives us a home in the world, that Hashem takes care of us. So Gershon is the Koach of Tefillah. Now Merari had physically the most demanding of the jobs, because Merari actually had to carry and schlep the heavy boards. Now granted, they used wagons, but they had to load it onto the wagon, so that itself was very, very heavy. It was physically the most demanding. Physical exertion is what Gemilas Chesed is. Remember, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us, what is the difference between tzedakah, which is charity, and Gemilas Chesed? So one of the differences is, tzedakah is with your money, Gemilas Chesed is with your body. Right? So if I give you a check, that's tzedakah. If I make a bed or I make a meal, that is called Gemilas Chesed. So Gemilas Chesed involves physically exerting yourself on behalf of another. Since Merari was involved in Gemilas Chesed, in physical exertion, that is the Bechina of Gemilas Chesed. So Gershon, Kehas, and Merari, or Kehas, Gershon, and Merari, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chesed. This is all from Rav Sadek. Rav Sadek then goes on and points out that although the world can only exist with all three pillars, you need three pillars, but Torah, as you might expect, is considered to be the most important of the three, for the following reason, that from the proper learning of Torah, you will come to Davin, to Avoda, and you will come to Gemilas Chesed. Torah can bring the other two in ways that the other two cannot bring Torah. In fact, the Chafetz Chaim used to point out that, other people pointed it out as well, that if you looked at even America, basically the first Jews who came to America, the first thing they established were social welfare institutions, hospitals, lodges, fraternal lodges. That's Gemilas Chesed. And then they established magnificent synagogues, right? The stained glass, beautiful synagogues that unfortunately are mainly churches today. And the point was that without yeshivas, without Limud HaTorah, there was no intergenerational continuity. The magnificent synagogues and the social welfare institutions did not stop intermarriage, did not stop assimilation. It lasted for a generation, but it didn't go beyond that. And that's why we have the so-called lost generations of American Jews, primarily between 1900 and World War II. Very, 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 very few. There were some heroic people who remained religious and halachically observant, but very, very few. It's kind of lost, called the lost generations, etc. Because without the growth of yeshivas and Torah learning, nothing gets passed down. Okay. So now, Rav Sadek goes on and makes the following, and this will connect to the Haftorah. Kishem, that a machaneh, a camp of holiness, requires Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim, three positive factors. There are also three negative factors that destroys Kedusha in Klal Yisrael. And these three negative factors are what, again in Pirkei Avos, Kina, Taiva, Kavod, jealousy. Taiva is excessive lust and desire for physical pleasure, excessive is important, we'll talk about that. And the third is kavod, the need for honor, glory, ego satisfaction. And Rav Tzadok says, the need to get rid of those negatives can be seen from another mitzvah in that parsha, and that is the Torah says, you shall expel from the camp three forms of impurity. Expel the metzora, the leper. Expel the zav. Zav is a person with a flow due to gonorrheal disease. It's gonorrhea. And expel the one that is tamei meis, the one who has come in contact with the dead until he undergoes purification. Now, Rav Tzadok wants to explain two things. Number one, he wants to explain that symbolically, the metzora represents the power of jealousy. The zav represents the power of taiva. And the tamei meis represents the negative of kavod. So when the Torah says you expel from the machane, the tsarua, the zav, and the tamei nefesh, they concretize within their person the negative and destructive forces of kina, taiva, and kavod. Now we'll see why. But a second thing he wants to explain is a bit of a complicated halachic structure. If you looked at Rashi, and Rashi is really just quoting the Gemara, when we say we expel these three tameim from the camp, they are not expelled from the same camps. Remember, there are three camps. Machane Shechina, the camp of the Divine Presence, which is the Mishkan and the courtyard of the Mishkan. Machane Leviya, Gershon, Gosh, and Merari. And Machane Yisrael. The Metzora is expelled from all three camps. The Metzora is expelled even from Machane Yisrael and lives in quarantine. The Zav is allowed in Machane Yisrael, but is only expelled from Shechina and Leviya. A Tamei Meis is the most lenient of all. One who is Tamei Meis is certainly allowed in Machane Yisrael, like today, and is even allowed in Machane Leviya. Even a dead body could be kept in Machane Leviya, as the Raya, Moshe Rabbeinu was a Levi, and Moshe Rabbeinu had control of the bones of Yosef. The only thing is, a Tamei Meis is not allowed to enter the Mishkan and the courtyard of the Mishkan, which is Machane Shechina, which is why, since all of us are Tamei Meis today, because if you've ever been to a cemetery, until you have Parah Aduma ashes, can't get out of it. That's why we don't go into Har HaBayis. Now again, the halachic debate, whether you can go to Har HaBayis or not, is the following. The outer perimeter of the Har HaBayis is actually mutter, because it's Machane Leviya in its holiness, and a Tamei Meis is allowed to enter Machane Leviya, although a woman that's Anita cannot, which is a separate issue. The inner part of the Har HaBayis, however, becomes Machane Shechina, and a Tamei Meis cannot go in. So most of us follow the stricter views of Rebbe Yashiv, Rav Shlomo Zalman, and even the Rabbanut, that basically says, since we're not exactly familiar with the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, so we're not sure where Machane Leviya ends and Machane Shechina begins, we do not go in any part of the Har HaBayis. Those who do go are simply following a psak that they're more confident where the boundaries are. So there's not really a machlokas in principle. This machlokas about going on the Har HaBayis is not a machlokas in principle. It's simply a machlokas in how confident you are that you can configure the boundaries. So Rav Tzadok wants to explain two things. Rav Tzadok wants to explain, number one, how is Metzora, Zav, and Tamei Meis connected to Kina, Taiva, and Kavod? Number two, why is there a differential in terms of where you expel them? The Metzora is expelled from all three. The Zav is expelled from two, but allowed in the third one, Machane Yisrael. The Tamei Meis is allowed in two and is only expelled from Machane Shechina. How does that correlate? So let's first take the Metzora. The Metzora's connection to jealousy is fairly obvious. We know that although Metzora is a physical illness that has manifestations of white blotches on the skin, it does not come from medical causes, but it comes from a spiritual infirmity, and the primary spiritual infirmity of Tzaras is Lashon Hara, motzi ra, you say bad about other people. Psychologically, Rav Tzadok says, one of the main reasons why people like to disparage others is because of a sense of jealousy. I look at a person, they have some mila, they're smarter than me, they're richer than me, they're prettier than me, whatever it might be. So I have something within me that wants to cut them down to size. So I say, well, you know, you think they're so good, but you know, I know something about them, whatever it is. So the shayrish, or one of the shayrishim of Lashon Hara, might be the insecurity that arises from the envy at somebody else's good fortune. And therefore, when we send out the mitzvah, symbolically we are referring to banishing the spiritual illness that gives rise to tzaras. Lashon Hara is a manifestation of kina, and therefore we send it out. Now, the reason why the mitzvah is expelled from all three camps is because although jealousy might be hard and all of us might suffer from it to some degree, there is literally nothing good about it. It is totally evil. It is totally bad. And therefore we banish it not only from the Mishkan and not only from the Levium, but even from regular Jewish life. Machne Yisrael, regular Balabatim. Get rid of it. It's destructive. It's evil. Now, you might say, well, don't Chazal occasionally say that the jealousy among Torah scholars, kinas sofrim, the jealousy among Torah scholars makes them learn better? Well, once again, Chazal used the word kina in different senses, and it's not always the same. Sometimes kina, even in the Torah, does not mean so much jealous as it means zealous. In English, they almost sound the same. But the concept is, there are two types of jealousies. If I look at another person and I say, gee, they're doing good, and I want to improve myself so I can be like them, that might be a positive motivator. Again, admittedly, shelo lishma, if I just want to do good because he's good. And of course, that can also be destructive if you have different talents and different abilities. But there is room in life to kind of improve yourself because you're looking at somebody else. So the jealousy that says, I want to be better because he's good, may, in some cases, be positive. Not always, by the way, but sometimes. But the jealousy that says, I hope they fail. I hope he fails. I hope he messes up. Because I don't like the fact that he's better than me. There is nothing good about that. Wishing for people to fail in life, wishing for people not to have success, has nothing positive to it. Like Rav Hirsch points out, we are uncomfortable with disequilibrium. We are uncomfortable when somebody's here and I'm here. So there are two ways we can even the playing field. One is I try to build myself up. The other is I try to pull him down. Well, gravity is easier to work with. Gravity is a more natural force. I would rather pull him down than raise myself up. You find this, by the way, in a lot of areas, even in trivial areas. You find it in dieting, by the way. One of the difficulties in dieting, let's assume that you have people who are with other people who are trying to lose weight, and one person is trying harder, often their efforts will be subtly undermined by their friends kind of telling them, you know, in other words, sometimes we are happier when we're all failing together than when somebody is achieving success. It actually is a serious problem in many areas, even when marriages is that way. If you have, let's say, people have friends who are all in failing marriages, you know, there'll almost be a kind of concept of, let's stay together and sink together instead of, you know, why are you betraying our friendship or whatever it would be. So that is why the Mitzvah is expelled from all three camps, because that type of kina is destructive. Now, the Zav's connection to taiva, to lust, is fairly self-apparent. Zav, as I indicated, is someone that suffers from gonorrhea. Sexually transmitted disease. Obviously, it comes from an abundance of taiva and lust. But here is the thing. Our relationship to sensual pleasure is not as unequivocal as our condemnation of jealousy. If jealousy, we can safely say, has no redeeming quality, our relationship to physical pleasure is very different. First of all, at a minimum, we have to eat. We have to have a certain amount of physical pleasure in the world. But number two, we also find, and this is connected to something else in the Parsha, that when a person becomes overly abstemious, overly ascetic, with respect to the permissible pleasures that God has given him in the world, that is called sinful. The classic example is the Nazir. The Nazir who takes a vow not to drink wine is considered to be sinful. He has to bring a korban at the end of his Naziris, because God essentially says to him, why do you think you're more righteous than I am? I gave you pleasure to enjoy. I gave you pleasure so you would be grateful to me. I gave you pleasure so you would use it for mitzvahs. Why do you want to be a bigger tzaddik than I? The Nazir is a sinner. The Mesilas Yesharim brings a Talmud Yerushalmi that says, and don't tell your kids because they can use it against you. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, a person will be held to account for every pleasurable experience they could have had in this world that was permitted, of course, that they did not take advantage of. Rav Hirsch used to say, Rav Hirsch, of course, lived near the Alps. He says, Hashem is going to ask every person, at least every person who lived in Germany or Switzerland, did you admire the magnificence of the Alps? Right, you can see, right? They're actually quite magnificent. You see from the airplane even. You see the Alps jutting up. I almost feel like it's going to hit your plane. And the concept is, Hashem says, I put them there for you. Now, Derech Agav, you might ask a kasha like this, tying into the Haftarah. That is, on one hand, we're told that the Nazir is a sinner. Naziris is not the appropriate state for a person. And yet we find one case in Tanakh where HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded, that a child be a Nazir from the time he was born, and that was, of course, Shimshon. This was a Nazir Elokim Mibeten. So the Chara, there's a bit of a contradiction here. If philosophically Naziris is not a proper state, then why would Hashem make Shimshon a Nazir? Now there's also a view, by the way, that Shmuel Hanavi was a Nazir. Not al pi Hashem, but some say Chana made him a Nazir. It depends. When Chana prayed for Shmuel, for a son, so she used the Lashon Umora al lo yale al rosho. Mora is mem vav resh hey. And there are two interpretations, two translations. What does the word mora mean? Some say mora with a hey is the same as mora with an aleph, which just means fear. And she was praying that that her son should be a fearless person who is not afraid of basar vadam, meaning he should only be afraid of Hashem. People should not affect him. She was praying that he should have a quality of courage and fearlessness, as if she saw that he would have to confront that. That is one explanation. The other explanation is, Mora with a hay means a razor. And she, in effect, made him a Nazir. And by the way, there is a halakha that a parent can make a child a Nazir. Now, this was not Al-Pi Hashem. This was Chana's own doing. But Shimshon is Al-Pi Hashem. But the short answer is this. The short answer is that the notion that Naziris is not a proper state does not necessarily mean that it's never a proper state. Because the Gemara tells us a story about Shimon HaTzadik, the great Kohen Gadol Shimon HaTzadik, that he once saw a person, a Nazir, that he felt was totally L'Shem Shemayim. And the story he had about the Nazir was that this was a man who was very, very handsome, and he looked into the water, and he saw his reflection, and he wanted to go to Hollywood or whatever, whatever. It's not clear what he would have done, become a prostitute, a male prostitute, whatever it is. But it says, Pachas Olav Yitzro, his Yetzer Hara, seized him. So he became a Nazir. Interestingly enough, it's fascinating, because a Nazir grows his hair long, but he says, but he would have to shave his hair at the end and kind of get rid of his handsome locks. And Shimon HaTzadik said, because he did this to conquer his Yetzer Hara, this was L'Shem Shemayim. It's similar to what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, ideally in life, you're supposed to seek a middle ground called the golden mean. You don't go to one extreme or another extreme. Right? A person should be charitable, but he shouldn't give all of his property to tzedakah. Right? A person should not be makbid on his kavod, But if people are spitting on him or humiliating him, he should have some self-dignity. Middle. But the Rambam says, let's say you have a tree, right, that's totally bent to the opposite direction. Sometimes to get the tree back to the middle, you have to go to the other direction as a temporary measure just to get it back. So the pshat is the following. Nizirus is not the goal of the Torah. The goal of the Torah is not asceticism. The goal of the Torah is not rejection of the pleasures of the world. But if a person is overly addicted to those pleasures, then he sometimes needs to keep away. Now apparently, let's take at least Shimshon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Shimshon had tremendous greatness. In fact, Shimshon's physical strength is a manifestation of a greatness of the nefesh. One has to understand, he just wasn't just a strong guy. And he was chosen by Hashem to be the leader. But Shimshon also had zeh li'umas zeh, very, very strong passions. Sexual passions. Passions that could be easily aroused. Passions that were his downfall in many ways. And therefore, for Shimshon, in order for his goodness to be able to be dominant, he needed to be separated from certain types of physical pleasures in a way that for most people might not have been desirable. Precisely because of the koach of his Yetzer Hara, which was equal to the great koach of the goodness and the righteousness that he had. And that's why you find that Shimshon was nichshal in various affairs or whatever, however you understand it. The Rambam says every woman Shimshon was with underwent a conversion. The Rambam says that beferish, but it was a conversion that was not meticulously done. In other words, there was technically it was a conversion, but not necessarily a completely valid conversion. And now with Shmuel, it's a little harder to see what Chana's cheshbon was, but it could be that even Shmuel, who of course was always kovesh, Shmuel was never nichshal in chait at all, but at least potentially there may have been something, some shirish there. So Nazirus is not the ideal state, but it is sometimes the necessary state just to come up in the middle and not go to extremes. So the point I'm making is that Zav that represents Taiva, it's Rav Tzaddok's point, we don't totally reject because we're supposed to enjoy pleasure. The very first mitzvah of the Torah is to be married and have families. A person is, the Nazir is a chote. A person will give a din v'cheshbon for what he could have enjoyed and didn't enjoy. And through our pleasure in this world, whether it's eating, whether it's visual pleasure, whether it's music, whether it's color, we get an enhanced hakaras hatov to the Ribono Shel Olam. Right? We give gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which opens our hearts and makes our neshamas closer to God. Therefore, the Zav that represents Taiva gains admission in Machane Yisrael, because Machane Yisrael represents ordinary life, regular Jews. In regular life, this is admissible and this is appropriate. But in Machane Levia, when you graduate to higher levels of Avodas Hashem, your involvement in the physical declines. But here's the point. Not as a matter of a self-conscious strategy. Not as a matter of saying, I'm going to separate. But it drops in the nature of an adult who stops playing children's games. As you get higher and higher and higher in Torah and Avodah, the pleasures of the world simply mean less to you. It's not renunciation. It's not precious. It's not separating. It's, you know, this doesn't mean that much to me. You know, they tell the story about the Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh was great gadol. He was the Rav of Volozhin. He was the Rav of Rav Chaim of Volozhin before Rav Chaim of Volozhin met the Vilna Gaon. And the Shagas Aryeh was a very independent gadol. And he often argued with earlier authorities. And legend has it, may be a legend, I'm not sure. Legend has it that he died because his bookcase fell on him with all of his svarim. And the story is that these were the early svarim that were taking revenge on him for his always arguing with them, like the Rambam and the like. So, yeah, I'm not sure if it's true, but this is the story they tell. So the story they tell is, you know, his neck was broken, his back was broken, but in his last moments of life, he asked somebody to hold a Gemara over his head so he could learn Shas one last time. He wanted to learn Shas before he died one more time. And in those days, people didn't pull any punches, so somebody went over to him and said, you know, you're about to die, you should say Vidoy. You know, say Vidoy. You know, what are you learning? Shas one more time. So the Shagash Ari was said to have responded. He says, it's not that I'm so righteous that I don't sin. He says, I just didn't have the time for it. Meaning to say, I was involved in learning and in mitzvahs. I didn't have time, that's all. It's a different type of attitude. It's not the attitude of, I'm conquering my Yetzer Hara. Although that's something we have to do. But it's like when a person fills his life with goodness and significance, the other things just kind of drop by the wayside. So Zav, Taiva, is a legitimate part of life, but as you grow, it becomes less important to you because you're connected to something higher. Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh, yeah. By the way, the Shagas Aryeh, the Shagas Aryeh was an older contemporary of the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon said on the Shagas Aryeh, the way he said it, he says, in Nigla, Nigla is the revealed Torah, that's Gemara, Shulchan Aruch. In Nigla, it is he and I, meaning he actually rated the Shagas Aryeh a little higher. In Kabbalah, the Vilna Gaon says, it's I and he, meaning he considered the Shagas Aryeh to be basically his equal, but he says in Nistar he's a little more, and in Nigla he's a little more, and the like. So that's the idea of why the Zav lives in Machane Yisrael, but Machno Vi already, you leave it. You put aside childish things. We then come to the third Tameh, which is Tameh Meis. Now, Tameh Meis is connected to Kavod. Now, this is not so obvious, but Rav Tzadok says the following. Originally, Adam and Chava were supposed to live forever. The Nachash convinced them to eat, at least Chava initially, to eat from the Eitz Hadas. And the Nachash's argument was, if you eat from this fruit, or whatever it is, v'hayisem kelokim, you will be like God, yodei tov v'ra, to truly understand good and evil. In other words, if I offered you a pill that says, take this pill and you'll be Hashem, whatever that means, your knowledge, your perception, your understanding of the world, that's a big ego trip. Supreme ego trip, right? To be God. So Rav Tzadok says, the shayrish of the chait of the Eitz Hadas was the she'ifa, the desire for honor, for glory, for the ultimate ego satisfaction. And that is why death came into the world, not so much as a punishment, but as a corrective. Because here is the thing. Mankind is indeed godlike in many ways. We are made B'Tselem Elokim. That does not mean in a physical sense. Hashem does not have an image. But it does mean we have autonomy, we have choice. That's a godlike characteristic. No other creature, including Malachim, has Bechira. Only two entities have Bechira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and B'nai Adam. We're B'Tselem Elokim. We can create worlds, we can destroy worlds. Not Yesh B'Yayin, to be sure, not from nothing. But we have all sorts of abilities HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Death is the ultimate reminder that as godly as we are, we're not God. That there is an unbridgeable chasm between the Bore, the Creator, and the Nivra, and the creation. And therefore death is the reminder of our shiftless, our lowliness, our subservience. That is why we become purified from death with ashes. Without explaining all the details of the Parah Aduma, suffice it to say that ashes are a symbol of humility, submission, and nothingness. Right? Avraham Avinu says to Hashem, Anochi, Afor, Va'efer. So here's the thing. Death comes into the world because of kavod. We become liberated. We become freed from the stigma of death, from the impurity of death, by embracing humility and submission. Even mikveh, which is the other purification from death, you need mikveh and paraduma. Mikveh is also the notion of humility, because mikveh is you're returning yourself to the womb and you're being reborn like a new baby. Right? The notion of mikveh is the rechem. Mikveh is the amniotic fluid that surrounds a person. Is a well-known idea of mikveh. That instead of being the adult that is filled with gaiva and pride, I become the newborn baby that is so dependent. And that's a tikkun for kavod, and therefore I become liberated from death. Right, that's the connection between... So you see, Mitzora is connected to kina, Zav is connected to taiva, Tamei Meis connected to kavod. But why does the Tamei Meis get admission even to Machna Leviyah? Because here's the paradox about kavod. Two things about kavod. Number one, kavod is awful, destructive, evil, gaiva, arrogance. The Gemara says that the world is not big enough for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and a Baal Gaiva. The Gemara says a Baal Gaiva is dochek raglei Ashkina. A Baal Gaiva pushes against the legs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, driving God away from the world. There is nothing worse than a Baal Gaiva whose heart and mind are so filled with how great he is that he cannot see the greatness of Hashem. So it's an awful thing. On the other hand, it is the worst midah you can have, and it's the most important midah that you can have. If a person does not have a sense of their greatness, of their dignity, of their kochos, then nothing can happen at all. A person will, why should I do mitzvahs? What can Hashem possibly care about what I do? My davening, my mitzvahs, my avodah. If a person thinks they're truly nothing at all, then there's literally no incentive within their lives to do anything. So kavod, in the sense of recognizing your significance, recognizing your importance, recognizing the abilities that Hashem gives you, is not only necessary for Machane Yisrael, which is ordinary life, but even for the Levi who wants to serve Hashem, you have to have a sense of your importance. By Yehoshaphat, who was one of the righteous kings of Yehuda, there is an expression in Divrei Hayamim, a very interesting expression. It says, Vayigba libay bidarchei Hashem. That means his heart was high in serving Hashem, meaning he felt confidence, he felt accomplishment, he felt proud that he had the zechus of serving Hashem. It gave him pride. Now again, we don't like to use this vocabulary either with ourselves or with our children, because it makes us uncomfortable, because it sounds like Baal Gaiva. But the truth of the matter is, it's not. A Baal Gaiva is somebody who looks down at other people. But to say, I'm proud that I'm a Jew, I'm proud that I have the zechus of doing mitzvahs, I'm proud of what I accomplished this year, in terms of what I learned or the chesed that I've done, that's a good thing. That gives a person the confidence to go on. That doesn't mean to be blind to your flaws. Rav Yerucham of Mir used to say that the person who is not aware of his flaws is a fool. You think you have no problems, you're a fool. But a person who is not aware of their greatness is a tragedy. It's a tragic thing for a person not to be aware of their greatness, because if you don't know your flaws, you don't know what you need to correct. But if you don't know your greatness, you don't know the tools that you have to correct what you need to correct. And it's only from that awareness. And this is such an important lesson for teachers and their students and parents and their children. And it's an important lesson for parents themselves, for people themselves, to be makir their kochos. So the union of kavod is malavayu, not only in Machane Shechina, but even in Machane Leviyah. Now, eventually, when a person reaches real devekus with Hashem, it's like a rocket, right? For a rocket to escape the atmospheric gravitational pull of the Earth, you need a tremendous propulsive force. Once it's in outer space, it can kind of go around. Same thing. For me to get to Hashem, I need a sense of my dignity and my importance. When I'm really connected to Hashem, then I become like the candle that's in the sun. I don't need my identity anymore. I've kind of connected it. So in Machne Shechina, you don't take your kavod. But most of our lives, we're either Machne Yisrael, or maybe we progress to Machne Levia. We need a sense of that kavod. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not entirely clear. Just try to clarify it a bit. Well, that's a separate. No, that's a separate thing. I mean, certainly, in every person's avoda, you know, you need time alone. That is actually very true. The Chafetz Chaim's mother used to say, "Alein de neshama is rein," which means, "In when you're alone, the neshama is pure." So a person does, you know, in Breslov, for example, Breslov has a big thing called Hispodidus, where you take an hour and you go off by yourself somewhere, and that's a very, very good thing. But you have to be very careful that it doesn't turn into arrogance and looking down at other people, right? That's the sakana, that you have to be makir, the kavod of everybody. But this is the idea. You know, the Vilna Gaon says a beautiful thing. There's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, the heart of a wise, lev chacham liyamina, the heart of a wise person is to the right, the lev kasil, the heart of a foolish person is to the left. Well, I don't know where everyone's heart is located, so I don't want to say anything, but I fear that I'm quite foolish. Probably true, because my heart is to the left. Most people's heart is to the left. Tefillin is put on the left arm, in part because that's where the heart is. Is everybody a fool? So they say B'Shem the Gra, although it's not in his Svarim, but it's Mipi HaShmua, that open up a Siddur, open up a Sefer. If you started from the beginning, to the right is what you've covered already, what you've learned. To the left is what you haven't done. A wise person looks at what he's done and feels he's accomplished. I've learned a pasuk, I learned a parsha, I learned a mishnah, I learned a halacha. And you feel good about it. And that gives you encouragement to keep on going. The foolish person looks to his left and says, oh, there's so much I didn't do yet. What's the use of even trying? So he says, we have to get this across, that on one hand, you know, got to be humble, got to be modest. But a person should take pride in their accomplishments, because that is what incentivizes people to go further. And that is why the Tamei Meis, that is kavod, does gain admission as far as Machne Levia until he escapes the gravitational field. Maybe that only happens after death, you know, who knows? Or Ruach HaKodesh, or you have that Devekas in HaKodesh Baruch Hu. Okay. Now, connecting all of this to the Haftarah, as I indicated, the Haftarah of Shimshon is interesting on many, many levels, and we really should probably carry it over. One is the fact that he became a Nazir, even though Naziris is considered to be sinful, and I explained why that was so. The other is that it was Al Pi Hashem, which is very unusual. Hashem normally doesn't make people Nazirim. The struggles, of course, this doesn't give you, the Haftarah does not give you the whole story of Shimshon. The Haftarah is the beginning of his career. But as you go on with his career, he has very problematic liaisons with Philistine women. There, the Rambam's insight was they all underwent a conversion, but it may not have been L'shem Shemayim, etc. Shimshon is a very tragic figure. Again, the way the Mefarshim say, his enormous strength was a reflection of his spiritual greatness. One has to understand that. But in that spiritual greatness was a very strong emotional turmoil. David HaMelech had that same characteristic of adami, of a certain redness, a certain passion. We even say in English the expression, the blood boils. very, very passionate people whose strength can go in Avodas Hashem, but could also go in other directions. And that's why Shimshon had to be a Nazir, precisely to be sure that his passion was directed in the right way. And then at various points he was Nichshol, when Delilah cut his hair and the like. By the way, there's actually a relationship between Boaz and Manoach. It's very interesting. The Medrash tells us that Boaz was a widower when he married Ruth. And as you know, he only lived with Ruth one day. He died the next morning. He impregnated her and died. And the story goes that Boaz was a widower, not only lost his wife, but Boaz had 60 sons and 60 daughters. He made 120 chasnas. And he never invited his neighbor Manoach, because Manoach and his wife had no children. So he figured, why should I invite this guy? He's never going to return the invitation. Now you could say, perhaps you could give it L'Shem Shemaya. Maybe he didn't want to make him feel bad because they were childless. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, because of this pegiah, Boaz will lose all 120 children, and Manoach and his wife will have a child that is equal, like, to Kol Yisrael in terms of what he's able to do. Again, it's a strange story, but there actually is a cross reference to Manoach and Boaz in that kind of. Well, part of it is, yeah. Yeah.
Was he this son? Was he this one? Was he that?
Right.
But if you have this parish that is the time of Manoach, and Manoach has Shimshon, we know it's Shimshon.
Well, yeah, I understand. But that linkage is not Bethavish in the Navi either. I mean, that linkage is assuming he was Ifson. That was yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't tell you anything. That's like saying it was during the time of the United States. You know, I mean, the period of the Shoftim is 350 years.
It's a matter of chronological time, necessarily. Yeah. It's a matter of the way the nation lived.
Right, that's correct.
And Israel.
No, that's exactly right.
So it's not the chronological issue that's being discussed. It's the time period and what was happening within that time period.
No, that's correct, which is why the exact chronology is obscure. That's exactly right, because Shvut HaShoftim is not designed to tell you anything in particular. That's right. So, you know, again, there's more to talk about, but let me just say a short word about the Haftarah Balos. I'll probably extend this certainly next week as well. And that is, Parshas Baloscha, the Haftarah Baloscha, is the same Haftarah as Shabbos Chanukah, for a good reason. It is the Haftarah in Perek Gimel of Zechariah. Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi are the very last Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael. And this is after the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, when Koresh has allowed them to return to Bavel, and the second temple, the second Beis Hamikdash, is being rebuilt with the Rishus of Daryavesh, the son of Esther, who is allowing them to rebuild. And there was a great hope that had the Jewish people merited, this could have culminated in Mashiach. It turned out we were not Zocha, but the Nevi'im at least were talking about this as possibly being Mashiach. The leader of the Jewish people, the political leader, was Zerubbabel, right, who drops out. Ezra and Nehemiah are a little later, actually, but at the time of the Binyan Habayis. And Zechariah, and Rashi himself says about Zechariah, and this is the only Navi that he says it, Nevuos Zechariah Stuma Ma'od. The prophecies of Zechariah are very, very unclear, ambiguous, visual images that are difficult. But he has a magnificent image of a great menorah with seven candles. And there's an olive tree, two olive trees, one on one side of the menorah, one on the other side. And there is a pipe in which the olives come down and the oil comes out of the olives and flows from the trees directly into the seven candlesticks of the menorah, seven branches of the menorah. And the Malach asks Zechariah, what do you see, Zechariah? Or what is the meaning of what you see? And Zechariah says, I don't know. I have no idea. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him the words that are really immortal words, one of the most famous and beautiful psukim in Tanakh. Lo b'chayo v'lo b'koach, ki im baruchi. The light of the menorah is the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that suffuses the world. And the number seven is Keneged, the cycle of the world, 6 days of creation, and a Shabbos. And it says, well, the message is this. Essentially, the Jews of the Bayis Sheni were not politically independent. They were subservient, except for the Hashmonaim for a short time. They didn't have political power. They were taking orders from the Umos HaOlam. And their spirits might be broken. They might think, you know, we're nothing. We're just a subservient little nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, power is not what counts in the world, because there is no real power. Everything that you achieve in life is through the spirit of Hashem, the light of the Torah, and the light of the Shekhinah. And when you have that light of the Shekhinah and the light of the Torah that permeates your seven-day cycle of life, you will be able to achieve anything that you need to achieve in the world. And don't look at power, and don't look at politics, and don't look at empires. With the Ruach of Hashem, you can do everything. And that is the great, great message of the Jews in the Bayis Sheni. It's a message for us as well. It is the Ruach of Hashem. But there is one pasuk I want to share with you as well, that in one of those psukim, it mentions, V'nasati lecha mahalchim bein ha'omdim ha'ela. I will give you a pathway among the pillars. So the Vilna Gaon says, a beautiful explanation, the Vilna Gaon says that a human being is called a mahalech because we can grow from level to level. We travel. An angel is called an omeid, stationary. Angels are much higher than us objectively, but where they are is where they're fixed. Some have compared it to a chessboard, right? The pawn is the lowest piece, but the pawn can change. The other pieces are higher, but they cannot change. They're frozen. Angels are frozen where they are. So the pasuk is saying, I will give you a way where even when you're among the omdim, even when you're among the angels after death, you can still be a mahalech, a traveler. And that is by the Torah and the Masim Tovim, that your children and your students and the people that you've influenced do after you've died. If this is why we do mitzvahs, le'iloi nishmaso, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu credits a person not only with what they actually did, but with the ripple effects of their actions. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets a chelek in every single mitzvah any Jew ever does. If you raise your children to be Ovdei Hashem, then even after Mea V'Esrim Shana, children, grandchildren, generations that you never even knew, it all runs to your credit. And that is Mahalchim Bein HaOmdim. Even when you're among the Omdim, you can be a mahalach. Of course, not to end on too pessimistic a note, it also works with negativity. And that is, if chas v'shalom, we create chilul Hashem, that can have negative repercussions. This is why, in fact, it's brought down on a yahrzeit, the neshama is judged new. Every yahrzeit, there's a new din. Now the question is, somebody died 100 years ago, what is Hashem judging him every year? Because every year, there's a reevaluation of the ripple effects of one's actions, l'tov, or chas v'shalom l'ra, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to make a cheshbon as to tov or ra. But that is what the Gra says, anasati l'cha mahalchim bein ha'om d'meila. So have a good week, and be well.